You people must have faith. You must not be stampeded by rumors or guesses. Let us unite in banishing fear.
Welcome to Fireside Chats with Oncology for the Inquisitive Mind.
Hello and welcome to Oncology for the Inquisitive Mind. I hope you're sitting comfortably because I'm going to tell you a short story.
Oh, please do.
Marissa Peters had been experiencing symptoms for years. Blood on her toilet paper after going to the bathroom, changes in her stool, and difficulty controlling the urge to poop. But she was in her 30s, healthy and physically active. She did not have any abdominal pain, and doctors dismissed the symptoms as hemorrhoids, or normal postpartum changes after the birth of her first son. When Ms. Peters finally visited a gastroenterologist in 2021, after having a third child and experiencing worsening bleeding from her rectum, along with changes in her stool consistency, an urgent colonoscopy confirmed that she had colorectal cancer. That was the very grim opening to an article in the New York Times, published March 27th, 2024, last week, I think, whatever that is, at time of recording.
Recently,
we will call it, about the increasing prevalence of cancers, particularly cancers of the colon and the rectum, in young people, people in their 30s, 40s, and 50s, too early to qualify for normal recommended screening. That's our topic today. I'm Michael, and that's Josh, sitting across from the table from me. Josh, how are you feeling about this episode?
Well, I'm glad I'm not sitting on the table. I'm just on the other side of the table. Look, it's really interesting. There's a couple of red flags in that opening paragraph, and I'm not sure if it's just the reporting. If I was an obstetric and gynecology specialist and my young female patient was having ongoing rectal bleeding, I would be pretty alarmed. And I hope that my obstetrician would be as well. But the other thing is the symptoms. So there's a little article here that I've got up, which is not what we're talking about. That says about 20% of younger adults with early onset colorectal cancer have one of these four signs between 3 months to 2 years before diagnosis. The first is abdominal pain at 11.6%. And then it kind of goes down. The other ones is sort of PR bleeding, and then followed by iron deficiency anemia, all relatively vague. But the thing is, that's only, what, 20% or less, right? And so the other thing to talk about, what about the 80% who get colorectal cancer when they're young but don't have their symptoms? So it sounds like it's pretty difficult.
It's terrifying is what it is.
Yeah, absolutely terrifying.
And I'm sure that everybody listening who's involved in the treatment of colorectal cancer, I know I have a couple of patients that spring to mind, will remember, and it always hits you harder, at least in my experience, these young people who have a very nasty disease that is frequently advanced by the time that they see it, because the 80% of patients that were missing from those figures, Josh, they probably present with liver capsular pain or jaundice or signs of metastatic spread even before they've had the initial diagnosis because they are de novo.
And super interesting you say that, because when they looked at the number of symptoms someone has and then the median time to diagnosis and increased risk, it kind of becomes sixfold and really, really interesting. The other thing to talk about is what's the five-year overall survival of someone with metastatic colorectal cancer. It's like 14%. It's absolutely terrible.
Yeah. And even though we tell patients with metastatic colorectal cancer that their prognosis is measured in years, you know, you have patients who will say, oh, great, well, you know, I'm 53 and I'm planning on living until I'm 80. You've got to sort of say, no, that's not what I meant. We're not there yet. So let's talk about colorectal cancer in young patients. And I do want to sort of focus in on something that you mentioned there, Josh, is the time from onset of symptoms to diagnosis. And this is something that you see in all of these stories about young people being diagnosed with colorectal cancer, is the I don't want to say dismissal, but the rejection of the possibility that it could be something malignant. You know, the common refrains in these articles, in these stories, and we've used the New York Times article, but, you know, there have been articles from the ABC, the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, and articles around the world. It's a worldwide phenomenon that we're experiencing, that the symptoms are ongoing for a long time before the possibility of cancer is frequently even considered, because, and we don't want to sound alarmist here, so we'll say the proviso that you know, the vast majority of colorectal cancer diagnoses are still made in what we would call a typical population, in people who are 50 years or older. The American Cancer Society predicted last year that there would be roughly 150,000 new diagnoses of colorectal cancer in the year of 2023, of which 19,000 would be in people younger than 50. So we're talking about a small percentage of patients, but the important thing to know, and the thing that that all of these articles are seizing on, is the fact, and it is a fact, that those numbers are on the rise.
That's it, Michael. And you know, the 19,000 that are under the age of 50, that's like 12% of that population, and the risk is double.
Yeah.
The risk is now double. And the question is, why?
Exactly. Why? and the honest answer is there's no one thing. There's no one thing we can say, it's, you know, the arsenic in the drinking water.
We do not have arsenic in drinking water down here in Melbourne, just in case anyone was
interested. No matter what our overseas or even listeners interstate might think.
The arsenic of the country. But there are some risk factors, and I think what they talk about is red meat, ultra-processed food, sugary beverages, binging these, cigarette, decreased activity of physical activity. You know, most of us sit in front of a computer all day long, but none of them fully account for this increase in early onset colorectal cancer.
No, absolutely not. There's the thought that there are genetic components. Whenever we see a young person with colorectal cancer, independent of their family history, it is common and, dare I say, standard practice for most centres that the patient be referred to a familial cancer centre to be screened for germline and inherited genetic abnormalities that might have led to this. The classic is Lynch syndrome or something like familial adenomatous polyposis. But the honest answer is that most people don't have a genetic mutation. Similar to what you were saying, there's no sort of one environmental factor that can account for this increase. There's no genetic factor either. There's not a sudden increase in the prevalence of of genetic inherited syndromes that could explain this increase. So it's multifactorial, which is the classical sitting on the fence answer.
That's it. And one of the really interesting paragraphs I want to take from this article is looking at the Hispanic population versus the non-Hispanic population in America. It says non-Hispanic black people.
Yeah. The black and the white population.
The black and the white. That makes sense. I'm on call, so forgive me. But what they found is that the non-Hispanic white people in the 1990s and early 2000s had an increased risk of colorectal cancer, but now they're actually really, really similar. And the question is there an environmental thing that we're not seeing in these two population groups that's led to this?
Well, it does. And again, we don't want to, although we do like a sweeping general statement on oncology for this oncology for the inquisitive mind.
This inquisitive mind.
Oncology for this particular inquisitive mind. It does suggest that some of the factors behind this, because, you know, as you said, the African-American population in the States has historically had a high rate of colorectal cancer. And this is something that's been seen across, I think, pretty much all cancer types, is that black people, for whatever reason, have higher rates of cancer than whites. But in the 1990s, early 2000s, the rate of cancer with the white population has been increasing. And, I mean, we have to say that, you know, the average socioeconomic status of someone who's Caucasian in the States is going to be higher than someone who's African-American. I mean, that's a fact, which suggests that it's not necessarily, or it might be inversely linked to socioeconomic status. So more sedentary lifestyle, more highly processed food, all of those sorts of things could be contributing.
That's it. And the things to talk about is like, okay, what do we know now? There are risk factors. Population is increasing. The number being diagnosed. There's a number of random other risk factors like arsenic and nickel, etc. But I haven't been to a nickel mine in the last couple of months, Michael. not that I know. But then what do you do? So you've got a young person in their 30s, might have some vague atypical symptom. Their family practitioner, general practitioner is like, look, it's probably nothing. Come back and see me in a couple of months. You know, what do you do to manage this?
Yeah. And it's terrifying, honestly. And, you know, both Josh and I have had symptoms where we have thought, this is getting a bit personal here, but where
DNM.
A bit of DNM, that we've been worried about our own health in this regard because of this rising trend. So both of us being doctors, we're able to go and see a gastroenterologist and get the appropriate investigations. But that's because we're in the know. That's because we know the data and we know people who can help us get the investigations. If you're not someone who thinks about this, then, I mean, the delay in getting diagnosed, we talked about that before, but it will be partially because you don't think that you have cancer.
Yeah, and I've got to promise we did not get the colonoscopies at the same time, at the same place.
No, we were holding hands while we did. but the what you do with these patients, it does add that extra layer. I don't want to sort of equivocate, but it does add that extra layer of emotion because you've got someone who we morbidly joke about this, but, you know, it's always the young person who's just had a major professional breakthrough. They're just about to have their first kid, or they or their partner is pregnant with a child, and there's all of these sort of emotional stack-ons. And so
huge
that adds complexity to the management of these patients. The other thing as well is that if you have a cancer, and any type of cancer in a young patient, the cancer by definition is almost always going to be more aggressive and less responsive to our standard treatments. We see this in colorectal cancer is classic. You know, you also see it in prostate cancer for men under 65. If you have an instance of prostate cancer and you're young, your survival is going to be significantly impacted, your response rates, etc. So okay, that means that medically as well as emotionally, there's
huge burden
and huge challenge.
And if we had to summarize this, there are kind of a couple of really key take-home points. The first is much more research is needed in the colorectal cancer space, both in how to identify young adults who are at increased risk, B, understand the mechanisms that are leading to this, but C, have better treatment options. At present, there are 3 or 4 lines of therapy, of which they work relatively effectively, but then they stop working because they're all classical chemotherapy or very novel monoclonal antibodies. And so we need that. My final point, because I'm just hijacking this now, is that early detection is the most important thing with most cancers, but also highlighting colorectal cancer.
Absolutely. And unlike most cancers, I feel like colorectal cancer is more likely to cause easily noticeable symptoms earlier.
Yeah.
It's not like cholangiocarcinoma, where the first you hear about it is when it's obstructing your biliary duct. Mm. It's not like lung cancer, when the first you hear about it is when it's metastasized to your brain.
A large pleural fusion.
Large pleural fusion, exactly. So colorectal cancer is one of those cancers that usually will present with symptoms early. So Josh was talking about new treatments, new screening. We might have to completely overhaul our screening guidelines as well. But the most practical takeaway from this episode, if you're a family or a general practitioner, if you're a surgeon, a gastroenterologist, or an oncologist, if you have a patient who has symptoms but they are outside the classical age range, don't let that deter you from investigating.
That's it. And also, if you've got a history of colorectal cancer, immediately it will influence when you should start screening.
Yes, exactly. And it might influence family members who start screening as well, because I think the guidelines for Australia, if you have a first-degree relative who had colorectal cancer under a certain age, your age of screening decreases by a decade or so.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
So it's something that really needs to be kept in the back of every practitioner's mind. And send your patients for scopes.
Don't be afraid.
Don't be afraid. Because the outcomes for patients with locally advanced or resectable colorectal cancer, despite recent advances, are still infinitely better than those with metastatic cancer. So exactly as Josh said, early detection is key.
And we hope you enjoy that episode.
Bit of a brief one. Yeah.
It's a brief one. I don't know how long we've been going on for. Fireside Chats.
Join us next week on Oncology for the Inquisitive Mind, where we have a very special guest.
Another one.
Another one. Because, you know, we've had about 10 so far for 2024. And so lucky number 11. But joining us all the way from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, is Dr. Adam Brufsky, one of the true pioneers, and we've had several of those on this show as well, one of the true pioneers of breast cancer. He's going to take us through his approach to all things early and advanced breast cancer, talk about the history and development from a very, very personal angle. It is a fascinating chat. We'll make up for this episode being a bit shorter because it's a long one, but trust me, you'll want to tune in.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to listening to it again.
I propose to sail ahead. I feel sure that your hopes, I feel sure that your help is with me. For to reach a port, we must sail. Sail, not lie at anchor. Sail, not drift.